song was released, I can't even believe I'm saying this, I think 42 years ago today. I mean, that's crazy. Like, when I was in my 20s and you think about a song from 42 years ago, it would be like Sinatra or something from the 30s or 40s or something. And that sounds pure to me right there. That sounds perfect to me. 42-year-old song? It's Throwback Thursday in a Doghouse. Welcome now to the show, a guy who does a tremendous job. We call him Old Blue Lines. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, ESPN.com, talking some puck. Greg, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing well. Still, that song's still younger than Yager.
The song is, that's impressive. That's a good job by you. That song is younger than Yager. There's no question about it. That Yager is like that, like Turn a Page when Seeger says, now here's one from 72, Turn a Page. And then it's like Yager. Yeah. Let me ask you a question.
Exactly.
You got kids?
Yeah, I got a 7-year-old daughter.
Oh, 7-year-old daughter. All right, that would be hard to. So here I am. I have this dilemma. I don't even know if it's a dilemma. I have four sons. My youngest of my four sons is a senior, and his football banquet is on December 2nd, which is the day of the SEC championship, which I have worked 11 of the last 13 of, and I am credentialed for this one. It could be Alabama or Auburn. It's going to be Alabama or Auburn against Georgia. Is there a dilemma here? I mean, first of all, I can't believe these people are so crazy to put the football banquet on the same night as the SEC championship game. But do I just find somebody to cover for me and that's it, man? I'm going to my kids' banquet or what?
Is it the first banquet the kid's ever had for football?
It's his last banquet he'll ever have. He's probably going to get a couple of awards. He was a leader on, he's one of the leaders on his team, and it's his senior.
Have you been in the house for him winning an award before?
Oh God, yes. You kidding me? I've been with him every step of the way, and he's the youngest one. All of my boys and all of my daughters, they were all athletes. All of my kids were athletes, not cheerleaders, athletes. Well, I don't want to throw shade on cheerleaders, but they all played sports. He's the baby, and he was as good as any of them, and it's his last football banquet. You know, his senior year football banquet, and I'm like, and he's like, "Hey man, you know, you kidding me? I'd go to the SEC championship game if I could go." And I'm like, "Yeah, but it's your, you know,
nah, but if he's giving you clearance, if he's giving you the out, take the out. I mean, it's all about, you know, the kid. Like I've had to pick between soccer games and whatever, and you just kind of figure out what you can, to put it bluntly, get away with when it comes to missing stuff with your kid.
Yeah, a game is, it's game would be one thing. The banquet, I just don't know. And the thing is, it screws up everything because I go over there on. My wife and I will go over on Friday. I do the show from SEC Fanfare. It's a big, huge party, and I do my Friday show from there. Saturday, I'm there, and I work the game for CBS Sports Radio. And then Sunday morning, we head to Florida, and I take a couple of days off, and I go down there and see my daughter and her husband, and we hang out in Florida for a week, do a couple of shows from Florida. The whole thing is blown up now because I'm going to be sitting at a friggin' rubber chicken, you know, banquet. Of course, you know, I don't know. I just stopped. All right, it's Throwback Thursday. Speaking of throwback, what's with this brawl between the Red Wings and the Flames? I mean, that was what happened in a minor league, an SPHL game broke out. What's up with that?
Well, it's the rare instance of a player being told to leave the ice, and the Red Wings leaves the ice, and then gets poked in the leg by Matt Tkachuk, who is, for those who don't know, one of the preeminent pests in all of hockey, the son of Keith Tkachuk. And he gets poked in the leg by Tkachuk's stick, and then he turns around and goes from the runway to the dressing room back onto the ice and sparks a really solid melee. I mean, players and the bench is getting involved. The goalie's getting involved. I don't know what's come down the pike today as far as discipline yet, if anything has. But the rule book says that if you leave the ice and then come back to the ice, and start an alter, especially if you start an altercation, it's an automatic 10-game suspension. And the player we're talking about plays less than 10 minutes a night, is the kind of guy you figure the league could make an example of without anybody getting really upset. So I would imagine that that's not going to be a situation where they're going to alter the rules all that much, even if he was provoked into doing it.
Now, that would be Witkowski, or are you talking about Tkachuk?
No, Witkowski. Witkowski's the one who left and came back on the ice, and Tkachuk's the guy who poked.
Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, you can't. You can't do that. You can't come back on the ice. But yeah, that was. I mean, that was old school. And Detroit, you know, just kind of slippery, sneaking their way up the table, and they're working their way back into this thing. It looks like they're playing, you know, a little bit of decent hockey here, and you know, maybe they can get back and start a new playoff run.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that on ESPN this morning in our little morning skate thing, whether or not we believe that the Red Wings are real or not. And they're a tough team to figure. Like, Jeff Blashill, their coach, has wanted them to play with speed and wanted them to play with tempo for a really long time. And it seems like this crew that they have is finally getting into it. I mean, like, you know, Anthony Mantha has been amazing, well beyond expectations with his point total this year. Dylan Larkin, after a bit of a down year last year, has rebounded to be as good as he was as a rookie. And overall, the team's just playing fast and playing good and well beyond what we maybe expected from them at the beginning of the season, to the point where Blashill, the coach, was a guy a lot of people thought could be in trouble. Maybe is kicking the decision on his job down the line a little bit. But you know, they're not the best possession team. I don't expect Jimmy Howard to give you the same kind of goaltending all season long he's given them in the first couple of months. I think they'll regress. But it's been a real good start for them. But the bigger picture about the Red Wings this year and next year is the salary cap situation. They're in salary cap hell right now, completely capped out. And then next season, they ain't much better. And then they have to give these two kids, Mantha and Larkin, their two leading scorers, their new contracts, their big second contracts in the league next summer. And that's going to eat up a bunch of cap space. So they're in a bit of a pickle right now as a franchise for at least the next 2 years.
And the Red Wing fans that I talk to, and there are a lot of them that are down here in the Dirty South that come down from Michigan and so on, especially into the Tennessee Valley for a lot of jobs on the base and so on. But it makes it even more difficult to see Toronto and Mike Babcock doing as well as they're doing, because it's like they're their guy. They don't understand why he's not still in Detroit, and it's like, damn, Mike Babcock went to Toronto, and now they're threatening to be one of the top teams.
Yeah, but I mean that's chasing the money, and I think it's also a situation where, you know, he'd want to be in Detroit for the inevitable fall off from where they were when he was there. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, was the coach of a brilliant team in Detroit for a long time that kept that playoff streak going. I don't think he wanted to be the guy to break the streak, and I also think that, you know, as one of the few guys maybe in the history of hockey that found it to be an appealing challenge to go to Toronto and try to win a cup there. He wanted to have that opportunity too. For years and years and years, everybody who's ever been born in Ontario, be it a player or a coach, is hyped up about coming back home to Toronto and trying to win a cup there. Rick Nash was one of them. There's all this talk about Tavares being a guy that wants to go do that or whatever. And Babcock's the only guy that did it. He's the only guy that from Ontario who went back there, took the money and tried to make the best of it. And so far, so good, man. You know, Austin Matthews is your centerpiece for a potential cup team and an amazing management group above Babcock. And they're in much better position than the Red Wings are as far as contending for a Stanley Cup.
Well, speaking of streaking, Greg Wyshynski with us, ESPN. Nobody's streaking more than our own Nashville Predators. They've won five straight, just hung a touchdown on the Washington Capitals, playing some really good hockey. And even with the five straight wins now, you know, 22 points, third in the Central. It's although they do have a couple of games in hand with St. Louis, but you know, to win five straight, you think you'd shoot up a little bit further even than that. But you know, Winnipeg is playing really good. St. Louis is playing really good. No one expects that Chicago is going to continue to flounder around where they are. They finally got a win, broke the Rangers' winning streak last night, but. Man, the Preds are playing well. I mean, it's too early for you to recant your little sixth in the division thing, but I mean, they are playing pretty good.
They are, and they're getting good goaltending too, which is a real key early on in this season. They're playing well, and you know, obviously, you know, there's a few points of concern. You'd certainly like a few more goals out of Ryan Johansson, and maybe a little bit better defense out of overall on the team sometimes in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, I think that that if you're someone who watched this team roll through the Western Conference playoffs last year, you're seeing enough similarities that you're feeling pretty good about life. And the fact that they are in a position, like you said, where they're in a playoff spot right now, minus Ryan Ellis, is very impressive.
Yeah. All right. In the NHL, I mean, we're known for getting rid of coaches pretty quick. No one quicker than Barry Melrose a few years ago, right? I mean, from Tampa Bay, that was pretty impressive. But we haven't gotten anybody jammed yet in the first few weeks of the season. How is Rick Tocchet hanging on to his job? Arizona hasn't won a game yet in regulation. And, Bruce Cassidy, I was all over him last year, but should this team be, mired where they're mired with just 16 points so far in the season, the Boston Bruins? Who's going to get fired, man? Somebody needs to get fired here pretty soon.
Well, in Tockett's case, I mean, if they're abjectly terrible this season, I mean, that's just going to be how it is. And, they're going to get a lottery pick. They're going to come back next year. They're going to do it again. And maybe he's the coach and maybe he's not. But I don't think that this is a situation where they're going to make a change in season, because what's the point? they're not rallying for a playoff spot, and it probably helps the organization to not rally for a playoff spot at this point. But in Cassidy's case, it's the Bruins are a funny little team. They're a team. I think you have to remember the context for some of these situations. Like, as much as the Bruins are struggling right now, and they might not look like they are a contender at this point, and you might look at the coach and say, well, why is this guy not, paying for it with his job? They're very much a team in transition. There's a lot of kids on that roster. I mean, you have a rookie in Charlie McAvoy playing first-pairing minutes with Zdeno Chara right now. It's a transition year for this team, and a lot of the guys that are part of that transition are guys that Bruce Cassidy coached in the American Hockey League. So he's kind of gotten in as far as, keeping his job and working with these guys, and then hopefully they're up to speed in a year or two, and you still have Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, in their productive years. Chara will probably be gone by that point, and you really make a push for it then. But I think he's safe only because in this transition, a lot of the guys that are going to be filling holes in that lineup are guys that he's already coached.
What about Todd McLellan? I mean, that's a team that shouldn't be where they are. I mean, something's got to give there. I mean, they're just burying themselves right now.
They are, and I think that, I saw them a bunch in New York, and they're kind of a mess at times. Basically their game plan should be get to the 3-on-3 overtime, because McDavid and Draisaitl are guaranteed when you get to the 3-on-3. So, listen, they're very porous defensively. It is not a problem with coaching necessarily, but a problem with construction. I mean, I just think it's a joke that at this point you have a situation where you're looking at that lineup and saying that they need scoring on the wing, and yet you've given up Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle in the last couple of years, and then not found suitable replacements for them, for McDavid and for Draisaitl. So, I just think that it's a mismanaged group right now that is not necessarily indicative of the coach doing a poor job, let's say.
All right, Greg Wyshynski has been our guest from ESPN, ESPN.com. Check him out there. He's doing a tremendous job, as always. Old Blue Lines. Greg, I appreciate you, man.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Thank you. Let's get a break in here. We'll come back. We'll get a Doghouse Sports Report right here on 730-1039. Yep.